You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. Today on the program... It also happens to be the day the Republicans will be caucusing in Iowa. And as such, we will speak with Dave Weigel on the ground in Iowa. Later in the program, in the better half of the program, we will speak to Ross Broccoli, making his way from Lincoln, Nebraska to Iowa. I'm not 100% sure why. For those of you who are recent listeners to this program, Ross Broccoli is always a treat. Also on the program today, the CIA has found no problem with their involvement with the NYPD. Phew! At least the CIA doesn't think they're breaking any laws. It's not like they're an agency that would lie about something like that. Also, over the weekend, Occupy Wall Street, more arrests in an attempt to reoccupy Zuccotti Park. I don't know how serious of an attempt it was to reoccupy, but they were making a statement. More data on income disparity, where it comes from. The Department of Justice basically saying to South Carolina, you cannot deprive Black people of their vote, their right to vote. And on the day of the Iowa caucus, ethanol no longer receiving tax subsidies as of, well, I guess yesterday. We'll talk about Ron Paul and the notion of his views. And how they may appear in some instances to align with views that liberals have, progressives, leftists. But on closer inspection, I think not. But certainly, we'll talk about it. Because there are some things I'm glad he's bringing up in the debate. And so I hope he does well so that it's there more often. And we'll even talk about how... my ability to wear sweater vests has been is now fraught with all sorts of horridness because of Rick Santorum. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Dave Weigel on the ground in Iowa, probably in his car. That apparently is all you do there, is drive around. We'll be right back after this.
I
are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone from Slate.com, reporting on politics and policy. Dave Weigel. Dave, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
So you're in Iowa at the moment, correct?
I am. I'm in West Des Moines, where three candidates, all of whom have led the Iowa polls at some point, we're talking to college students, Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul and Nick Santorum, or not college students, high school students. Sorry, they're not that desperate yet.
Now, I'm doing my best now. I read your seven sort of like basic, I guess, sort of archetype tweets from Iowa, and I'm trying my best not to ask you any of those questions. But is there anybody running, or I should say, I guess, involved in the caucus who has not led the polls in Iowa?
Well, at this point, no. At one point or another, I mean, Mitt Romney's been on top, and Newt Gingrich has been on top, and Michelle Bachmann's been on top, and Ron Paul, et cetera. I mean, John Huntsman, who specifically did not try, and has a little bit of respect from some people here for not trying. That's it. Everyone else has had return of this. And I'm not telling you anything brand new here to point out that this is just evidence that people don't like Mitt Romney that much. That's funny. If you go into the polls, you know, about half of voters say they basically like him, Republican voters, I mean. But they just are really desperate for somebody who's not him. You know, half of the people who like Romney still want someone else. And they just the question today is whether they are convinced that they should take a break on Santorum, who they don't know very well, who's the last one of these guys left, or they're just exhausted and going to go for Romney.
Now, from a process standpoint, how does this actually work? I mean, before we get to that, let's just talk about the Santorum thing, because I think the biggest advantage, it seems to me, in terms of popularity in the Republican race so far, which, of course, today's the first day that anybody's actually going to, you know, do anything concrete, but has been a lack of awareness about the candidate. I mean, you know, it seems to me that every time somebody is unknown, they do better in this Republican race, and then they fall back to earth once people start to understand them. So this could be actually, this is the perfect time for Santorum, isn't it?
It is. I mean, he is barely known. If he is known at all, it's at an extremely local level. He's done, I think he switched up the count, but it's close to 370 town halls in Iowa for what will probably end up being like 130,000 voters, right? I mean, he is known at that kind of granular level, but known how there are all kind of ways to know people. You don't actually. I've met lots of people for 15 minutes or heard them talk for 30. None of these guys are known that well. And the more important thing is that he hasn't been, I hate the word vetting, but, you know, he is completely misunderstood to these voters. He portrays himself as this spending-cutting, stalwart reformer who, you know, anyone who works with him in the Senate will tell you that's not quite it. He was basically like a right-wing Arlen Specter. He would shovel money back to Pennsylvania, and then he would, you know, he would spend the rest of his time fighting to ban partial birth abortion. You know, and good for him, but it's not. He's the latest guy to present himself as a full spectrum Reagan in the making, and
right.
You know, that's all voters know about him, and they haven't had a chance to hear the other side yet. Whereas everyone else, they've realized they've got full view of their buffoonery, whatever it ends up being.
So, all right. So tell us how this process works, because, how does the process work on the Republican side?
Well, it's pretty simple. People show up at 7 Central Time to these precinct caucuses. And I use the word precinct caucus because what they technically are for is that you will pick representatives to a county convention from your precincts who will then pick representatives to the state convention who will then pick delegates. And if it sounds like I'm describing something that doesn't actually pick delegates right now, I am. This doesn't actually pick delegates right now. You're just kind of, it is more of a preference. At this moment in time, you like these guys. It's more of that than anything else. So you show up. It's actually not like the Democrats, which we learned a lot about 4 years ago, because there's no threshold. If there's 100 people in a room and 14 of them like Michelle Bachmann, they can still like Michelle Bachmann. In a Democratic race, if it's 14 out of 100, they need to pick somebody else.
Ah, okay.
That's
the part.
Yeah, so they basically will make up whatever amount of their money they can make up in these contests, and then they will just kind of report them. They go to a central data processing facility, and they come out pretty fast. But we are...
So there's no horse trading like, yeah. Oh, you're my second choice. I'm going to jump over to you because we don't have enough to hit a threshold.
No, the closest you get with that is that people make statements in the open caucus. They don't need to be from Iowa to do that. I mean, there's a couple of people in from out of town who are going to speak for candidates in some of these, well, not living rooms quite so much. It's more like schools. I'm going to one in a high school tonight. They can make it a argument. Now, if you're not very well organized, your representative might just be some guy reading off a piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like, you know, you're the dinner speaker for some charity, and you're the substitute speaker, and they get your name wrong, and they just like read whatever's at the top of your IMDb page. You could get that, or you could get a really passionate advocate who actually wins some people over. So, I mean, part one of the day is making sure everyone who could possibly vote for you comes out. And part two is making sure, you know, in that room you win some people over.
Now,
and that's probably all you can do, yeah.
One of the things that we keep hearing about Ron Paul is that there's a lot of Democrats and independents who are going to be going, registering as Republicans, which you can do in the Iowa caucus, and then voting for Ron Paul. Do you have that sense? Is that going to happen?
All their campaigns are kind of playing that up. They were less worried than they were a week ago, but they raised the possibility that there's going to be a lot of independent anti-war folks who show up, and that they really shouldn't count those people if they do. I mean, their votes will count. They'll say, well, they showed up, but they're not really Republicans, so the real winners are.
Right.
And definitely, I followed Paul around yesterday in kind of some college towns in eastern Iowa, northeast Iowa. And I did meet, like, Obama voters who were going to go for Paul this time, and maybe not in the general election. They just wanted to vote for somebody who was anti-war. And definitely, I mean, some people who discover one guy who was an Iraq war veteran, one guy who was an Afghanistan veteran, who were anti-war, and they wouldn't vote for Obama anyway. So they will vote for Ron Paul, and if he's not the nominee, they won't vote for any Republican. So you can see why they're a little bit irritated by that. But if they... The thing they keep saying is, if independents end up making up to some huge chunk of this, they're all going to go for Ron Paul, probably. This whole anecdotal, though, like, reporting is a lot of collection of anecdotes. We all admit that it's not the best way to learn things. But, you know, after you're here for a week, you kind of stack a bunch of anecdotes. And I've definitely talked to people who voted for Obama but will vote for Romney, those like, dream voters who... You know, if the reason Republicans think the guy can win the presidency is because of people like that,
right.
And but they're not that passionate. I mean, if they're not as motivated to show up as some of these Ron Paul people are.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I was up in New Hampshire in 2008, and
yeah.
You know, if you walked around the streets and of Manchester or traveled across the state, and it was. Everywhere you turned, there were Ron Paul supporters out in the streets. But I think at the end of the day, every single person who voted for Ron Paul also carried a sign for him because he didn't do that well. But it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. But at the end of the day, it seems to me that so much of this is really just about how the expectations are set and the spin and the context of who supposedly voted and whatnot. Because there's nothing necessarily predictive of this. It's almost the way this gets reported is what actually happens. Is that accurate?
Man, I hate to admit that, but yeah, we're going to see the same thing in New Hampshire because we're going to head to New Hampshire after this. Some candidates are going to head to South Carolina, and everyone's expecting Romney to win New Hampshire. So we're going to have this very inside media game of saying, you know, what a good win would be. Is it going to be 20 points? Is it going to be 17 and a half points? If Huntsman comes in second, is he the next surge candidate? If he comes in third, is he done? We make up a lot of this, and voters are influenced by it. There's like this real Heisenberg uncertainty principle
right.
to covering all this stuff. Iowa especially, because they're not really assigning delegates. I mean, I kind of was fed up a couple days ago and wrote about that, but I was kind of saying, look, you know, I'm aware of this. It feels like the rest of the press corps is aware of this, too. And everyone, when you're kicking back after a day of driving around here, everyone's just kind of prepping for a Romney nomination. So I don't want to say the rest is useless. It's kind of, I like this because it's an interesting way to find out what people are fearful of in 2012. I mean, you don't get that many random chances to walk around. I mean, if you're like, you know, Jay Leno producer or something, you'll like walk around the streets and ask people what they, what they're worried about, what they think. But other than that, like, there is a real sense in the media that there's like, there might be some drama before the inevitable Romney nomination. I mean, you even hear people kind of admit, boy, it'd really be a pain if Ron Paul sticks in there and wins a bunch of caucuses. We have to cover that campaign instead of just getting to the general election.
Right.
And I'm like, well,
I mean, that's the sense I get, is that the, you know, there's something about this where you've had, you know, 6 to 8 months, maybe a year's worth of sort of foreplay, and the press just is so excited that there's going to be something concrete that they just want to get this process started with. But I'm interested in what was your sense? You've walked around, you've done your Jay Leno thing. What are people afraid of?
Well, there's different types of voters. There are people who really think that if we reelect Obama, he's going to collapse the currency and we're going to be, you know, giving all of our oil to China. And people who really feel like everything wrong with America is something he did in the last month.
Right.
And that we must defeat him or we're done. Other people are just generally worried about unemployment and they're not quite sure how to fix it. There's not a lot of concern about foreign policy, I would say.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is actually a reason I Paul has done pretty well, is because people just don't care about it right now.
Right.
And you meet voters who really want to cast a anti-establishment vote, so they'll go for Paul. And the only, you know, slippage he's had in a couple of days has been from people saying, well, he's a little too crazy on foreign policy. Whereas a week ago they were saying, I don't care about his foreign policy.
Right.
But no, just an overall panic of like American decline. It's not like they want to elect a candidate who will do X. They just feel like Y is happening and it has to stop.
Yeah, I mean, so
you hear a million things they're worried about.
Is your sense that people blame Obama for this decline, or is it they are upset that he hasn't stopped it?
I would say they are upset that he hasn't stopped it. There's some genuine anger towards Barack Obama, but this is a state that, one, he had a lot of crossover support in caucuses last time, and two, he won by a pretty huge margin for a Democrat in November.
Uh-huh.
And you actually meet more people who are just, they really wanted him to be a good president, and he's not. And in some cases, their expectations were just weird. I mean, they're basically conservatives who didn't want universal health care or anything like that,
right,
but liked him personally, so they don't like him. In some cases, they really did want him to succeed, and there are people who are, I guess, more of these people who voted for Ron Paul, who thought he would change Washington, and he didn't, and they don't know what to do except vote for somebody else. I mean, it's not like he could personally change the filibuster with an executive order, but they don't know what to do because they had such hope for him. I mean, it's fairly depressing to cover this. There's no reason why the media kind of wants to go on and just cover Romney already.
Now, based upon your sense of what the press corps, this game where they have, you know, certain expectations, what does Romney have to do? Tell me, like, what do the top three potential candidates need to do to have a supposed victory? In other words, based upon, forget the numbers, what they actually be, but your sense of what the press corps, what story can they not ignore if it happens?
I think Santorum or Paul winning by some, well, there's not really a margin of error in a vote,
right,
in a poll, but winning by something like 5-6 points. If it's anything fluky, they'll just say, well, it was a fluke. Ron Paul got more people out, he'll never do it again. Or Rick Santorum got people out, he'll never do it again. And I suppose those are the ones that would convince us. If Paul, Romney gets less than he got last time, he got 25% last time, he gets less than that, I think that would be another minor factor.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think those are the things. He needs to, people, we've already kind of, it's not even that his campaign's so good at expectation setting, it's just that the possibility of what could happen changes every 5 seconds, and we've already kind of, like some kind of a supercomputer in war games. We've already crunched out like 8 million versions of tic-tac-toe into like possibilities. They've already kind of figured out anything that could happen. And we're kind of, if we're ready for like some three-way tie where somebody wins narrowly, the headline would be three-way tie in Iowa between these guys. And Romney will win New Hampshire and we'll start rolling the ball downhill. But if it's like one of the non-Romneys wins by a lot, that's when we're going to pay attention.
And is there any campaign that is particularly situated outside of Romney's to in terms of resources to go down the line? It seems to me that the only person who has any type of resources is Ron Paul. It seems like everybody else has either run out of cash or has no operation.
Romney is okay with cash. He hasn't paid quite that much attention to as much attention to organizing as last time.
Right.
And Paul has done it for 5 years. So I'm just kind of agreeing with you. Paul's people have offices in 12 states, and that's kind of what I was focusing on today before this all starts, is that there's a lot of people in Iowa who are not, you know, come in from Minnesota or South Dakota, and the media keeps saying, oh, well, this is proof that Paul has no support in Iowa. Well, one, he does, and two, those people are here in order to train themselves for Minnesota, right, which has a caucus pretty soon on. So this is what I was kind of hinting at before. Like, there's a possibility that there's a really well-organized Paul operation that keeps getting him delegates because the Romney people are surprised. And you've got this, I think it'll be fun, kind of a war between the establishment and the, you know, the Republican establishment that run the party at various levels and the Paul people. But it won't be like last time. I mean, the Paul people have been pretty good and genteel about not pissing off the Republicans like they did 4 years ago. I mean, they took over a lot of state parties. Tea Partiers took over a lot of state parties. They've actually lost a little ground after last year, but they're just not – they get along with the mainstream Republicans because they helped elect a lot of these guys in 2010.
Right.
I mean, they hated Obama as much as anybody else. And I think they're going to – but, like, not probably enough to – stop him from getting a nomination, but enough that you really shouldn't ignore it. I mean, that's why I was paying attention to him yesterday. Like, Rick Santorum, if he does well, will have done well by doing 380 town halls.
Right.
And he can't do 5,000 town halls in Florida this month.
Right.
Whereas Paul had a Florida operation going since 2008.
It's fascinating that that none of these other Republicans, you know, all, none of these not mitts seem to have any real depth, essentially, any type of bench, as it were, going forward. And I think Mitt Romney is going to have to show a tremendous amount of weakness in Iowa for anybody to start contributing to Rick Santorum or whomever it is, I guess.
Well, I think so. And that's also, Romney will have won if he wins, basically, by convincing very rich people to help him beat the hell out of other ones with other kinds of negative ads. And who will do that for Santorum? Who is the, I mean, maybe there's some evangelical leaders who will fund this, but there's just not the, there's different wings of the Republican Party, one of which counts on huge money from business interests and tycoons and what have you. I mean, I don't think David Koch is going to decide for Santorum is his new favorite.
Right.
He's frankly a libertarian businessman. That's one thing. We could be surprised, but I mean, if Romney ends up winning here, it really will be because no one attacked him. He had the money to attack everyone else. He convinced voters who were pretty ready to be convinced that no one else was acceptable. And he can just keep doing that against people who don't have the time to do real campaigning.
All right. Well, Dave, I appreciate you going along with me here. I've held you for longer than I wanted to, but good luck there. And we'll talk to you soon. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, little sound from Iowa. Talk about what happened with Occupy this week. We were trying to get in touch with some Occupy Iowa people, and I wanted to ask Dave about that, but I held him far too long. My sense is I haven't seen anything out of there, and we've tried to get in contact. Not sure what's happening. And by all means, if anybody from Occupy Iowa is listening, give us a call at 646-257-3920. We'll take your calls later in the program. We'll also hear from Ross Broccoli, who's in Iowa and the the better half of the show. We'll be right back after this.
Some people say that bowling alleys all look the same. There's not a line that goes here that rhymes with anything. Had a dream last night, but I forget what it was.
You know, folks, in general, I don't want to spend too much time on these things. But on the day, obviously, of the primary, it's interesting. And, you know, I guess we'll see. The real story here is Ron Paul. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program. One story I saw today is that Romney supporter who met with Romney says that his China bashing is just that, just hot air, not to be taken seriously. Which, of course, you know, this is what I don't know that there's anything that Romney says that should be taken seriously. The real danger in a guy like Mitt Romney is just that he would be exactly what the moneyed elite in the Republican Party want him to be. Some could argue that's not terribly different than President Obama. However, he also needs to cater to an electoral base that is nativist, homophobic, racist in many regards, anti-women. So keep that in mind. The other really disturbing news coming out of Iowa is that Rick Santorum apparently is branding himself with sweater vests. And I'm just beside myself. I don't know what to do about it. I'm sitting here in my own sweater vest right now. And to think that this guy has glommed on to my success with a sweater vest. I got a message for Rick Santorum. And I certainly hope, listen, what I would like to see, this is what I would love to see. I'd love to see Mitt Romney get about 22% of the vote in Iowa. 3 or 4 percentages less than he got in 2008. I would love to see Ron Paul come in first and Rick Santorum come in second, or vice versa. I don't care. Why do I want Ron Paul to come in first or second? Because I would love the Republicans, and frankly, the whole country, have to deal with a guy who's talking about we shouldn't invade Iran. Now, I got real problems with the way he gets to his opinions that I agree with, because at the end of the day, that's more important, frankly, in terms of trying to figure out what his opinions are going to be on other issues. But we'll talk about that in the better half of the program. And the reason why I want Rick Santorum to come in first or second is, one, I want people to understand what I have done with sweater vests. Okay? You can go back 2 or 3 months ago, look at me on Up with Chris. I'm wearing a sweater vest. I've started that trend. I'll also be on his program tonight at midnight on MSNBC, a special tonight they're talking about. The other reason I want Santorum to win is because this guy is such a nut job. But the Republicans aren't aware of who he is. The country would reject him. The guy carries around, he still has a bottle with his stillborn fetus in it that they buried in his backyard or something. And this guy is a full-on nut job and is convinced that there's a lot of sluts in Boston. I mean, it goes on and on. Here's his comment, okay? Even when they don't mean to be, if you want to understand why Republicans dislike taxes, why Republicans have a problem with any type of social services, it is because of their perception that their tax dollars goes to black people. And here's Rick Santorum accidentally saying that out loud.
And she told me that the state of Iowa is going to get fined if they don't sign up more people under the Medicaid program. They're just pushing harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families. And the best way to do that...
All right, pause it. We don't even care the rest of it. Now, did you hear what he said? I don't want to give black people other people's money and make their life better. Now, aside from the fact that the majority of welfare recipients are white, but that's not the relevant. Now,
he makes it sound like there's no working black people.
Oh yeah, well, but what he's getting at is exactly what is why Republicans don't like taxes. Because I don't want to give money to black people. Now, to be fair, his campaign has said he didn't say black people. He said blah people or bly people. I'm not joking. That's what they said, blah people. I'll play it again. Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's me.
Welfare here, and she told me that the state of Iowa is going to get fined if they don't sign up more people under the Medicaid program. They're just pushing harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money.
No, I know what he's trying to say. No, he didn't say, I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody. He said, I don't want to give blah people. You know, blah people.
I think I heard blag people.
Blag. Blag people.
Blag people.
Right. Blag people. Well, of course. No, you don't want to give blag people that because they have blagness. Rick Santorum, I want you to know I'm rooting for you tonight. I hope you do well. And then you should maybe give me a little credit for sweater vests. This weekend... For those of you who aren't aware, it is now 2012. That means that over the weekend, since the last time I spoke to you, which was actually a week and a half ago almost, New Year's Eve happened. More importantly, New Year's Eve happened down in downtown New York. About 500 people plus. Were you down there?
I was not, no.
More than 500 people... gathered in Zuccotti Park on Saturday. And at about, arrest started around 10:30 p.m. 100 people were at the park at about 7 p.m. And at one point, they started to grab those metal, what do you call those? Fences. The crowd control fences that the cops have. And they grabbed them from around the perimeter of the park and put them all in a huge pile in the middle of the park. This is a public park, incidentally, which they now have, like, essentially the functional equivalent of, like, a metal detector. They have surrounded the park, and there's only, like, one area where you can enter it. And the cops basically frisk you as you go in. So at about 1:30 a.m., security guards and cops entered the park. There was 150 people there. The officers pushed protesters from the park and arrested about at least five people. And then a cop gets on and says that even though the park is supposed to be open 24 hours, it's closed until 9 a.m. for no reason other than they're just going to close it. And then the police started closing the sidewalks around Zuccotti Park because, you know, nobody hangs out on sidewalks on New Year's Eve in New York City. That never, ever happens. And then, as people started marching in different places, the cops started randomly shutting down streets and sidewalks in downtown. So I'm not sure what the total of arrests were. But it was another classic overreach. And, you know, for the most part, Well, I'll let this Jason Amati, San Jose, California, was quoted in the AP story. So the police got very aggressive, started pushing people, pepper spraying people. He said, I got pepper sprayed in the face. And his quote was, many of us felt it was a symbol of the new year, of what was to come. People protesting peacefully, but without fear. And I hope that's going to happen in 2012. And I anticipate it will. I saw another report.
Ellen Barkin took to Twitter after, saying how she was walking down the sidewalk and she saw arrests happening, and she was pushed by police, and she said how she saw a girl who was not part of the protest just walking by trying to find her boyfriend, and because she just happened to walk in the area, police grabbed her and threw her in the back of a bus.
It's unbelievable what the cops are getting away with. It's unbelievable. And
they're the media is pushing hardcore this story that a police officer was stabbed with scissors. But the story is coming from everyone who was there that this protester did have scissors. He was using them to cut those like white straps that tie the barricades together, and he was cutting those. And a police officer went over and put his hand in the way as he was cutting that white strip, and that's how the police officer got cut. And that same police officer is later on video picking up said barricade and using it to punch protesters in the face, where other police officers have to come over and grab it from him and tell him to stop doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't buy it. There's any story they can to make it look like there's violence, they're going to create. And frankly, I just think, you know, people need to come up with a more discreet way of cutting those zip ties. And you know, the technology of the protester is going to be a boon this year. I think we're going to see some very interesting things. Now, I'm not sure what to make of this, but there was a tweet from Tim Pool. He is from the he was one of those guys from the Other 99 on Ustream, that Global Revolution Live was evicted from their Brooklyn studio.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I'm not even sure I know what that means.
The police came and told them to get out.
How do they do that?
I have no idea.
That seems crazy to me.
Apparently, they went to numerous different departments to find something wrong with the building. Like someone had to find something wrong with it, and they took them multiple tries to find someone to find something wrong with it.
I mean, I saw that thing, and the first thing I was like, we should expand this office. We'd love to just provide an office for those dudes. We cannot do it as it is now. We're a little bit small. But who knows? Maybe this is the year. Our numbers are through the roof these days. And if people take the time to become a member at majority.fm or majorityreportradio.com, become a member. It is the primary. It's beyond primary. 97% of our revenue comes from members. And I would like to keep it that way. I don't know what my alternatives are. I guess go and try and get money from some, you know, the Democracy Alliance, some bullshit establishment, fund or something. But you can help support this program, keep it alive, and help us expand, frankly. By becoming a member at majority.fm.
Here's something interesting. The Global Revolution was evicted from the building for safety issues. No other tenants were evicted from the building.
Well, yes, I understand. Because the thing is, you know, it's very, if you have computers, these Global Revolution guys, they have these newfangled computers. And computers are very dangerous. Nobody else in that building in Brooklyn has that, I'm sure. Meanwhile, the Rose Bowl parade got occupied. There was supposedly thousands of the Occupy the Rose Parade organizer Pete Thottam estimated the crowd at protesters at 5,000. Cops don't put out a number. But they brought down a huge sort of octopus float. They had
like this full blown up Constitution that just rolled down the street. Like they had to, like, must have been 100 people holding that thing.
Yeah, there was a 250-foot-long banner, We Are the People.
And you would have no clue what happened if you weren't watching the live stream online.
Right.
Because even though
they cut away from it on the broadcast.
And you know what? They had asked the permission from the Rose Parade, and they were given the float after the last official float. They actually had a float number.
Yeah.
And still, the second the last quote-unquote official float went by, all the feeds that showed it on TV just cut from the show. Thank you very much. Thanks for watching.
Of course. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back in the better half of the program, which will be available to you if you become a member, of course, and, of course, all of the past better half of the programs, which include phone calls from different people. We'll be talking to Ross Brockley on the ground in Iowa. Won't be the hardest-hitting news thing, but it'll give us a perspective. He's a big Ron Paul fan and also, long-time guy from the show, I guess. I don't know what else to say. I'll talk about the story about the CIA and the New York Police Department. A great story in the New York Times about the rules on press coverage not being followed. Their own rules, the New York Police do not seem to be following in terms of press coverage. This is the year, folks. I really do think this is going to be a fascinating year. An exciting year.
Especially with Obama signing the NDAA on New Year's Eve.
Yes, I was going to talk about that as well. That's just a nice way to kick it off. Jonathan Turley says it's one of the greatest infringements on our civil liberties in ages. And I'm going to talk about why Ron Paul's notion of civil liberties is not really civil liberties. You got a problem with that? Call me, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this. Oh, and folks, you can also support this program by buying your junk through our Amazon link, by buying Just Coffee from justcoffee.coop. Use our coupon code MAJORITY, get a 10% discount. We're going to have a majority blend up there soon. We have merch. What else? Rate us on iTunes.
If you were on vacation and missed the Best Of shows last week, definitely go back and download them.
Oh, Matt did a great job with those. But, you know, I got to tell you, I don't think anybody. I don't know if our entire audience doesn't go by the New Year's that we do, and if they any of them celebrate Christmas. But numbers through the roof this past week. So by all means, give us a review on iTunes or become a member. 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. We'll be right back after this.